the episode 2 bit, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce Volker Pantenberg, who is a sort of professor of film studies at the Free University in Berlin. And in 2015, he was the co-founder of the Harun Farocki Institute, which is also based in Berlin. He has published widely on the essayistic film and video practices, experimental cinema and contemporary moving image installations, and his recent publications include Farocki Godard Film as Theory in 2015, Cinematic Objects, which was co-edited. Cinematic Object. No, it was,
I think
you.
I was the only editor.
You were the only editor. You
not the only editor. Author.
Yeah. And Screen Dynamics, Mapping the Borders of Cinema, which is also an edited collection. And it gives me a great pleasure because Volker's a real friend of the SA Film Festival, and also just a personal thank you for that wonderful job you've done on the dossier as well. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Janet, for having me. Thank you to Ricardo, Michael, all the people involved in the SA Film Festival, and especially for this invitation to compile this dossier in the journal. At one point I realized that Werner Deutsch had kind of misunderstood the assignment, because I think at the beginning we thought I'd do a longer conversation with him maybe about his work at the film unit, then at one point he sent his text, and I said, I thought we were doing an interview or a conversation. Had I known, he would have preferred this, but I'm really thankful that somehow also you managed to have him share and collect his recollections from the time. It's a beautiful text. It's called The Three Musketeers. It's in the dossier that you can address, and as I said 2 days ago, Three Musketeers was the designation that Danielle Huyer had for the WDR film unit when she went there. She said, you're like the Three Musketeers, Les Trois Mousquetaires. So what I'm going to present is, it's about 10-15 minutes, and it's mostly about the context at WDR film unit. I keep saying WDR, it's too complicated to say WDR for me, so WDR means WDR. And not only about the film unit, and if you address or if you look at the dossier, I think it's important also to mention or to stress that there were other editorial departments that were just as happy to experiment and as open for experimentation at the time. You mentioned Telekritik, Angelika Wittlich, who did these amazing programs for a while. Then there was Literatur und Sprache, two people, Christoph Burgmann and Annelien Kranefuß, who produced Escape Route to Marseille, for instance, and many other interesting programs. So at that time, there really were lots of different spots where people could experiment. Okay, and what I'm presenting has a title. It's called The Televisual Cinematheque, the WDR Film Unit. Günter Peter Straschek's five-part series Film Immigration aus Nazi Deutschland is one of many examples resulting from a specific, fascinating film cultural configuration in 1970s West Germany. This configuration involved public television, in this case the Cologne-based third program Westdeutscher Rundfunk, WDR, but also the first West German film schools like HFF München and DFFB Berlin, and a monthly journal like Filmkritik. For about two decades, roughly between 1970 and 1990, a rare combination of individual enthusiasm, infrastructural possibilities, economic and legal generosity turned public television into a treasure trove of film history, as well as of film historiograph exploration. The film unit, Filmredaktion at WDR, was not the only place involved in this. The dossier in Critical Studies in Television tries to paint a larger picture. However, it was particularly active and inventive in bringing film history to the TV audience's attention. Established in 1966, the film unit followed a threefold agenda. Firstly, establishing the model of a televisual cinematheque, commissioning editors like Wilfried Reichert, Georg Alexander, and Werner Deutsch organized retrospectives of films by John Ford, Max Ophüls, Jaziro Ozu, and many others. They were also attentive to Hollywood B directors with less prestige, like Jack Arnold, or emerging positions like the Brazilian Cinema Novo, or exponents from Third Cinema. Reichardt, following Godard and Agnès Varda over decades, but also part of the X-Screen activities in Cologne around 1968, had made an 8-part program on New American Cinema in 1968. He also commissioned a slot called Experimente, where Robert Beavers presented work by Gregory Markopoulos, or Bodie Gabor's Motion Studies 1880 to 1980 were shown. There were all these niches or individual slots where you could really do inventive stuff. Secondly, they commissioned young directors and film critics to realize film educational programs that would accompany and frame these retrospectives. Fulfilling the legally prescribed Bildungsauftrag, the educational mission that they had to fulfill, Frida Graf and Enno Patalas made a 45-minute program about Lubitsch in 1970. Hartmut Bitomski commented extensively on John Ford, 1976. Rainer Gansera analyzed Roberto Rossellini and so forth. It was instrumental that the two film schools in Munich and Berlin that I've mentioned had been inaugurated in 1966 and 1967, so that the first students had either regularly terminated their studies or were thrown out in the political turmoil of 1968. And in any case, they were looking for work opportunities, and many of those young students were commissioned to do programs like the one we're seeing. Thirdly, the film unit was also instrumental in supporting independent international filmmakers by constantly buying and showing their work. Often debut films, like in the case of Apichat Pongwerasethakul or Jim Jarmusch. So this also extended into the realm of feature filmmaking. Another example from 1989 is documented in a nice anecdote. And I quote, and it's a bit of a cliffhanger, who is speaking there? Okay, quote, "We're on location, picking up a few shots and trying to finish the film. Morale is low. People seem to be on the verge of dropping out. The New York producer showed the rough cut to his friends and changed his mind about helping us complete the film. The rush of summer energy is obviously long gone." This is what Richard Linklater says about November 1989, about the difficulty of finding money to finish Slacker. And the quote continues, "I don't tell the others, but we are completely out of cash. I can't ask anyone I know for another dime or favor. The thought of going out and trying to raise money from people I don't know sends a panic through me." Surprisingly, a letter from Cologne arrives. I rip it open. WDR Television. It reads, "Dear Mr. Linklater, I saw Slacker in New York on the market, and since then I cannot get the film out of my mind. And therefore my question, are the rights for the TV in West Germany available? Sincerely, Werner Dütsch." Dütsch's commitment to purchase the film for the WDR is crucial. The money flows, the necessary loans to finish the film are approved. And another short quote, "I feel extremely lucky, a no-budget film that will somehow be completed without a delay for lack of funds." End of quote. As these factors suggest, WDR and public television in Germany were active on several levels in shaping our sense of film history. Albeit in a small broadcasting territory in North Rhine-Westphalia, with potential reruns in the other third programs nationwide. The contribution of public television to film historical thinking, not only in Germany, but in many European countries, is a vast field which remains under-researched, I think. It has remained, it seems to me, a rather blind spot in the shadows of the attention devoted to museums and art spaces on the one hand, the internet and the video essay on the other. So there's some work that remains to be done. Film Immigration from Nazi Germany, directed by Günter Peter Straschek, is an exceptional work, but it is also an example for the spectrum of possibilities within public television at the time. Straschek, as I recall on Saturday, was one of the first students to start at DFFB in 1966, along with Farocki, Hartmut Bitomski, Helke Sander, Holger Mainz, and others. He was also the first to be expelled in February 1968, and his rigor can also be sensed in the decision to write Nazi Germany in one word, he would insist on this, which was the subject of a heated debate when Bayerischer Rundfunk, another of the third channels, refused to broadcast it due to this spelling. They wanted Nazi Germany to be in two words, maybe with a hyphen in between, but they didn't like the idea of Nazi and Germany being in one word. So they wanted to mitigate the political impact of Strašek's grammar, but Strašek insisted and prevailed. They ended up showing it in the way he wanted it. And I guess Bernard Deutsch was also instrumental in helping this decision to be fought through. Bernard Deutsch, commissioning editor of Film Emigration, has written beautifully about this his experience with Strašek's program in a text called GPS Meanderings, which was quoted earlier by Maren. I recommend to consult the abundant catalogue that curator Julia Friedrich published to accompany the Strašek exhibition Film Emigration Politik last spring in Cologne's Museum Ludwig. Just a few more words concerning the program itself. Film Emigration from Nazi Germany is 289 minutes long. It was broadcast in 5 episodes in late 1975 by Westdeutscher Rundfunk each week on a Tuesday at 9:15 p.m. Anyone who is unfamiliar with the background to Günther Peter Strašek's television series on Film Emigration might mistake it for the conclusion of a wide-ranging research project. The filmmaker conducted over 80 interviews in Europe and the USA, which at a shooting ratio of 1 to 8 means that around 40 hours of film must have been exposed. However, from today's perspective, the series is more of an overture, the interim, albeit central, result of an investigation which Strašek continued together with Karin Rausch, his wife, until his death in 2009. For several years, he received financial support for this from the German Research Council, but he did the bulk of the work in the greatest possible autonomy and with a fundamental skepticism about academic research. Perhaps the investigative counter-bureaucracy entailed in tracing, interviewing, and documenting in sound and image, and later by means of a detailed questionnaire, is in strong contrast to the exterminatory bureaucratics of the Nazi a priori. This could maybe only be conceived of and realized by Strašek with the individual and the periphery at its starting point, and not in the administrative framework of state-supported science. 289 minutes of Film Emigration aus Nazi Deutschland, that's a lot of time for television. And I think there's something about this durational quality as well. I mean, there cannot be anything like an adequate response to the horrors and the violence and all this, but I was reminded that many of those films, like Eberhard Fechner, Der Prozess, about the Majdanek process, is almost 4 hours. There's Marcel Ophüls' Hotel Terminus, which is a very long film, and there's, of course, Shoah. And the duration has, I think it's crucial, it's important that these films are very long and that you need to take time and that they can sink in over a longer duration. So 289 minutes, but given the more than 80,000 hours with which an emigrant spends abroad during an exile of 10 years, this duration is no more than the blink of an eye. For Strašek, it was crucial not to restrict his research and the interviews to well-known directors or screenwriters. On the contrary, he tried to cover every activity that had a bearing on film. Secretaries, copyright lawyers involved in the film business, cinema owners, etc. An ironic objection did the rounds at the time, which to Strašek's mind was not totally unjust. So the objection was, well, then you must include everyone who simply went to the movies as well. And he said, yeah, basically that's true, but it's maybe not possible. It was partly due to this diligence and the aim at a comprehensive account of the injustice and violence that the project became bigger and bigger. Film Emigration was Strašek's and Karin Rausch's joint project. Their plan to publish an encyclopedia in 2 volumes was never realized. In 2012, the enormous documentation was deposited at the German Exile Archive in the German National Library in Frankfurt am Main. While the written documentation remains, the production file at WDR seems to be lost, or at least there's very little traces of it at WDR. Also, you will notice that the image quality is not as good as it could be. The WDR has done its best to improve the quality of the old Matz tapes, but unfortunately, nevertheless typical of TV archives practice in the 1970s, neither the original 16mm footage nor the 36 hours of outtakes have been kept and preserved. Yet another loss for film historiography. In the dossier on the TV essay that I had the pleasure to compile for Critical Studies in Television, I included a letter that Joachim von Mengershausen, commissioning editor at Fernsehspiel, yet another department, producing Fassbinder, Wenders and the like, wrote to Harun Farocki in 1976. In this letter, and it's ironically it's with the WDR letterhead on top, in this letter he places an explicit call for expropriation and complete accessibility of TV archives to the public. Since these productions have been financed with public money, he argues, it makes no sense that they then turn into the private property of the broadcasting companies. Von Mengershausen's proposition to open the archives to the general public remains as relevant today as it did in 1976. However, there can be little doubt that it would need a concerted effort and a strategic alliance between academia, cinephilia, and politics to promote such an expropriation, or at least with the help of WDR and other TV stations to uncover more of this legacy. So this is the mission, I guess, that we should have in mind, and the SA Film Festival could be an important component in fighting for this cause. Okay, thank you.